Welcome, listener, to Stuff Smart People Like podcast, featuring a panel of smartly dressed smart people smartly discussing smart topics for the entertainment of other smart people. Going around the room this week, panelists, as always, are Ed.
Yes, I'm a full-time research psychologist and a part-time podcaster.
Jordan.
Full-time clinical psychologist, part-time enigmatist.
And Dean. I'm a full-time office worker and part-time culturist.
Ooh.
So let's get right to it. We're going to start this week with our smart suggestions. Ed.
For this week, I'm going to suggest Baba Brinkman's Rap Guide to Evolution. Okay, so Baba Brinkman, for those of you who don't know, is a Canadian-born hip-hop artist. And I know that doesn't sound like he's got a lot of cred, and he certainly doesn't, but he does among academic circles because he has done albums on topics such as the Canterbury Tales and my favorite, the Rap Guide to Evolution. He released it about 2 years ago, and he just released a remix of it that comes along with five videos. And I actually got permission from him to play some clips from his songs on the podcast. So I'm going to be playing those a little bit later so you can get a flavor of what he's all about. But the songs range from topics like natural selection all the way to really specific topics like costly signaling, if you're familiar with that. It's really interesting. And all his lyrics have been peer reviewed.
That's
so
hilarious.
I'm going to post a link on the blog to his videos. They're really great. And one of them, the video for natural selection, Darwin breakdances against some of his opponents. And I won't spoil who the opponents are, but it's worth watching just to see who those people are and to see Darwin breakdance. So that's my suggestion.
Very nice.
That's great. Jordan, what do you have?
I'm going to do one. This is actually a web comic called Penny Arcade from Jerry Holkins and Mike Rohlik. They've been doing this since 1998, and it's actually pretty much started out just kind of making fun of gaming, so like computer games and other kind of games like that, and they've kind of since expanded a little bit, but it's still focused on games, and it's pretty hilarious. I've been reading it for years now. I was reading this as an undergrad.
Great. My smart suggestion this week is an app currently only available for iOS, so anyone who has an iPhone or an iPad can use it, but I listen to a ton of podcasts at work. And I don't have Wi-Fi available for my phone, so I use an app called Downcast, and it's just a podcast catcher, but it makes up for what the built-in iTunes app lacks in catching podcasts. So I can just tell it to update in the morning when I'm at home with my Wi-Fi, and then I have all of my podcasts ready to go when I'm ready to listen to them.
That's pretty cool, and also very helpful if you want to listen to this podcast through iTunes, because we are now on iTunes. In the last podcast, we said we weren't, but we've since figured out the technology and are now listed on iTunes.
Absolutely, and if you do get the Downcast app, it's easily searchable. So those are our smart suggestions for this podcast. Let's move to a new segment, and this is a segment we like to call Smart Not so smart move, I guess, of the podcast. Who wants to start? Jordan, you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start off. I've got mine from the world of sports. These are actually events from this past week here. I'm actually going to confine it to baseball here. So for my smart move of the week for baseball, I'm going to go with Albert Pujols signing a 10-year, $254 million contract with the LA Angels. This is going to take him into his 40s. So a smart move by Pujols, whether it's a smart move for the Angels is to be seen. My not smart move of the week is going to be Ryan Braun testing positive for performance-enhancing drugs. And, you know, like every athlete that tests positive for some kind of substance, he has released a denial statement about it, and so he's probably going to come out with that. You know, I didn't know that this Bolivian supplement contained steroids in it. So that's probably what's going to happen. But, you know, if people don't know what the rule is, if the first time you test positive for a banned substance in Major League Baseball, it's a 50-game suspension. So these have never been overturned.
That's what, like 10% of the season?
a little bit under a third of the season.
And it's important to point out that Ryan Braun is also the National League MVP this year. So this is the highest profile banned substance case to date. Ed, got anything?
Yeah, mine kind of mix current events with politics. My smart move of the week is, well, of the podcast, is going to be Amazon's, I don't know what they actually called it, but it happened yesterday, this past Saturday. They effectively paid people via discount to go out to their competitors' brick and mortar stores and scan products they wanted to buy on Amazon in the stores with their smartphones. So they basically said, we'll give you 5% off up to $5 if you tell us what our competitors are pricing things as. And I think that's pretty smart. Amazon's no stranger to paying their customers to do work. They actually are, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this, but they have a service called Mechanical Turk, which is basically you post jobs, and jobs can be very broadly defined, mostly internet type jobs on this site. And people then come in as workers and do those jobs for you. So a lot of psychologists are actually using this to collect data for studies. And they pay you a pittance. It's like, do my survey that's 30 minutes and you'll get 50 cents in Amazon cash, right? And people line up by the dozens or thousands to do this, really. And you put a survey up, you have 100 people answering it in 15 minutes. And they're paying them next to nothing to do it. But as far as this discount goes, I mean, how much easier is it? Like, well, we don't have to do the work. Like, let's just have them do it. So that's pretty smart. I thought that my not so smart move was going to be Rick Perry, and it is. But well, I thought it was going to be his campaign ad, which basically seemed to appeal to just about no one. Where he basically came out and just displayed his bigotry in public.
I think he knew he was who he was appealing to, but
I don't even know if it got. I don't even know if it got through to the people that he wanted it to. You know, it's
no, because those people don't own computers.
Well, we should describe what the commercial is.
Right, right. So he comes out and he says, "I'm not." First off, he says, "I'm not ashamed to say I'm a Christian," which in a country where what 90% of people have some sort of Christian religious affiliation, that's not really something you're really ashamed of, right? You're in the majority for the most part. And then he says, you know, I think there's something wrong with the country when gays can openly serve in the military, but our kids can't celebrate holidays and pray in school. And then he basically goes on to say that he's going to end Obama's war on religion. So one thing I thought was interesting about this, there's a lot of rumors circulating that it's actually more disliked on YouTube than Rebecca Black's song Friday. That's true currently, but it's not entirely true. They actually pulled down Black's song a while ago to try to put it behind a paywall so that people would actually pay to listen to the song. And at that point, it had like 3 million dislikes. So it's still quite dwarfing that. But it's an interesting issue in itself. And the other interesting thing about it is, I don't know if you noticed this in the video, but someone has since pointed it out on Twitter. He's wearing a jacket that is basically the same. Yeah, it's the same jacket that Heath Ledger wore in Brokeback Mountain. It's the same style. You can Google it. You can ask Mr. Google. He'll show you a picture of it. But this isn't the stupidest thing I think he's done this week. He made a bet with Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney
made the bet with him. Right. So Mitt Romney said, you know, basically, I'm tired of people talking about, you know, Romney care and single payer mandate. And if you can, Rick Perry, if you can provide me with evidence that I'm for the single payer system, then I'll give you $10,000, which is ridiculous because this campaign is going to come down to the economy. And $10,000 is surprisingly close to 2010's limit for a single person's income to be considered at poverty level, which is $10,890.
Yeah, actually, that's 2011's figure, actually.
Oh, that's 2011's.
That's already adjusted, yeah.
See, I thought, yeah, okay. So they're playing with money. They're making a bet over something that could clearly be looked up by anybody in their campaign staff or researched by people that they already pay. They're just using, I don't know, what is, I guess Pujols could now maybe make 250 of those bets with him or something like that. But
a lot more than that.
Yeah. A few more than that. Yeah.
Just 10, a few.
How much is it? 250 million?
250 he's million averaging 25 million a year.
Oh, so you could do that every year. 250 a year. My math is not good, as we've learned from the last podcast.
Aren't you a statistician almost?
Yeah, but I let Excel do all the calculations for me. I like to trust technology. Exactly.
Terrific. My smart move of the week is actually based on a dumb move of the week, which is I saw this on both NPR and on the NBC Nightly News, that Alec Baldwin was removed from an American Airlines flight for playing Words with Friends, which is the Scrabble type game for your iPhone or your smartphone. So that was sort of a dumb move. But his smart move is that last night he went on SNL and did a really great little satirical piece where he played the captain of the plane that he was removed from. And as that captain praised Alec Baldwin for being such a smart and talented national treasure, I believe he called him. And I thought that was just a really outstanding way to diffuse sort of a ridiculous public debacle that he was involved in.
And it also should be pointed out that he is playing himself playing the captain. Like Seth Meyers keeps saying to him, Alec, I don't think this is such a good idea.
Exactly. And he just says, go with it. Just work with me. So in essence, he's making himself the butt of his own joke, which in any sort of public light is the best way to sort of garner public opinion on your side. So my not so smart move is from a story that I found on space.com. Apparently NASA, and I'm quoting here from the article, NASA's Office of Inspector General states that the agency lacks sufficient controls over its loans of moon rocks and other astromaterials, which increases the risk that these unique resources may be lost. So NASA goes to space, pulls down all these moon rocks over the last 30 years, and has been loaning them out to institutions and places all over the country and presumably all over the world. And now they don't know where a lot of it is. And on top of that, we now no longer have it means to get to the moon, particularly because the Apollo program is over. So if we want more moon rocks, we're going to have to pay somebody a bunch of money to fly us out to the moon to get them. So this seems like a not so smart move of the week.
I don't know. The moon was so 1960s. It's going to be all about the red planet, and it doesn't matter because we're already sending Val Kilmer there. So we're going to get some red rocks to replace.
I'm worried about those moon rocks falling into the hands of a supervillain, personally.
Well, yeah, we don't know what sort of properties they hold.
Exactly.
Are you meaning that they possibly could be like the kryptonite to Tim Tebow?
So what you know about natural selection? Go ahead and ask a question and see where the answer gets you. Try being passive aggressive or try smashing heads in and see which tactic brings your plans to fruition. If you have an explanation in mind, then you're wasting your time, because the best watchmaker is blind. Takes a certain base kind of impatient mind to explain away nature with intelligent design. But the truth shall set you free from those useless superstitious beliefs in a literal Adam and Eve and that Edenic myth, because their family tree is showing some genetic drift. Take it from this bald-headed non-celibate monk with the lyrical equivalent of an elephant's trunk. It's time to elevate your mind state and celebrate your kinship with the primates. The weak and the strong, who got it going on? We lived in the dark for so long. The weak and the strong, Darwin got it going on.
Should college players be paid? What do you guys think about that idea?
Do you want to take it?
Sure. So I'm not an athlete, but I am sort of I studied acting in college, and I've acted for different organizations where the organization took money from the audience and I did not receive a share of that money, because the trade-off was that I got the experience of acting for this organization or just acting in general, like in front of people, which anyone can argue is great experience. And so, but there's a certain point that you get to, or that I've gotten to anyway as an actor, where I've said, you know what, they're kind of making a good deal of money here. And after a number of these, I don't know that I'm gaining so much more experience so as not to be paid for it. And I equate that to these student athletes. They're gaining experience and they're gaining an education outside of the football field. But at what point does the scale tip and the experience that they're gaining is negligible after, you know, X number of games?
Well, I think I guess I just want to kind of do a quick rebuttal to part of that. So you talked about, yeah, there's the experience. But I guess, you know, one thing, you know, I don't have like a hard and set, I guess, I don't fall on one side. I'm kind of really still playing it out in my head about where I fall on this issue, because if you wanted to, you could just kind of go in and get a job. You know, it'd be harder because you wouldn't have like some of the contacts and some of this experience. But, you know, for every major, you know, out of like the top sports, you know, I'm looking at the top three because those are the ones I know the best. Baseball is the only one where you can actually get drafted out of high school. You know, so for football, you have to spend like the one and done rule. You have to actually spend 1 year in college before you're eligible for the draft, or so many years out of high school. And then in football, it's a similar thing. You have to be at least 3 years out of high school. So like they can't actually go into the draft for most of these guys until they've spent these years.
Well, okay. So first off, one thing, hockey is the same way as baseball. They get drafted out of high school, but they can still play college. As far as my perspective on this is, I probably have a more extreme perspective. What I would love to see happen is to just sever sports from colleges, you know, altogether, because like literally it's like become an abusive relationship almost. Like, you know, colleges were kind of founded to, you know, get a good education and for the, you know, furthering knowledge, something that our listeners can really appreciate.
Five of them.
Yeah, all five of them, which all probably have college degrees or are working on a college degree. And you know, and then sports came along and was like, hey, how are you doing? And then they kind of started, oh, we'll try this out for a little while. And then, you know, sports just got huge and started bringing in all this money. And, you know, college was like, oh, well, I kind of like having nice things and I kind of like having this to depend on, became kind of codependent. And now sports pretty much run college, as we can see in the example with Penn State. Knowing that that's not going to happen, knowing that they're never going to sever, I think that some level of payment can be useful. I mean, not every player gets full rides. That's true. Even among those big schools, there are walk-on players. There are players who have partial scholarships.
Or even no scholarships. Yeah, so it's not, yeah.
And even with the full scholarships, they actually have to do quite a bit of work, to the point where between their schoolwork and their athletic work, they wouldn't have time to do a job. So they couldn't get that extra money. Now, the NCAA did rule in October that they can give, I think, up to $2,000 a year in payment to players to cover like books and things like that. Hmm. So those are some things to think about.
I'm talking about, and I guess one thing, and I don't know this top of my head, it'd be something actually interesting to look up and post about later, but you know, I don't know if the income that's gained by these, or, you know, garnered by these sports, I guess I wonder, is it all earmarked just for the athletic department, or is some of that actually go back into the college's general fund? I guess that's something I don't know, is how much of this money that's coming in, how much of it actually sees or goes into some of the academics, because I think that could be a strong point.
I can tell you, because you guys went to a Big Ten school. And I went to, it's still Division I as far as football goes, but I went to a MAC school. As I understood it when I was going there, and this could be completely wrong, but the Big Ten schools paid us to play us. Mm-hmm. And then that money got filtered back into, a lot of it got filtered back into like the general fund for the school. So there are a lot of, you know, mid-sized schools like in the MAC or some of these smaller schools that get paid to play the big schools, essentially paid to lose. Their campuses are built on a lot of that money.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard. I don't know if that's true, but if that's the case, then that makes these sports really important for the smaller schools.
Yeah. Okay. I know that I saw one comparison. I think it was University of Texas. And I can't remember the numbers now. I think they said that they could pull in like $90 million in a season. And that, you know, even with removing operating costs, there's still like $70 million in the plus. You know, I think, and some of that money goes to the other athletic programs. So, you know, gymnastics and the smaller things like, you know, club teams and things like that, I think get some funding from the general bigger things. But I think a lot of it still has to go into the general school fund. Like, and there are the intangibles too. If your team does really well, for instance, like George Mason University went to the Final Four in 2006, and they've experienced tremendous growth, not only because their program now has more prestige and gets more attention, but also because they've had a huge spike in tuition and people just coming to the school. Just, I mean, this happened with Boston College too, with Flutie, right, where people just started after that, what do they call that? The miracle, or I don't remember, the pass that he threw, the Hail Mary pass, or whatever.
Is that the cereal guy? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, Flutie Flakes.
Yeah,
so they had a huge upswing, and they're, George Mason is just expanding. I mean, they're just building everywhere, building new dorms, they're renovating every building. So like I said, I don't think it's something that, even if the money's not coming there directly, it's coming indirectly through tuition.
How many students also on campus choose that school based on who aren't athletes, who pay their own tuition, choose that school based on the athletic program? You know, it's a huge recruiting tool too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it makes a ton of money. And I think there are some things there going on that are a little bit strange. I mean, I think, you know, they'd have to test it out, but I think they could do some kind of a system where they could allow the players to sign with agents. So the university doesn't pay them, the agents do. And there'd have to be some sort of
future investment kind of thing.
Yeah. Like agents are basically betting. They'd have to have some way of determining whether or not the players are viable, and then they would give them some sort of like almost like a signing bonus, or let them take endorsements. You know, I mean, maybe they do some endorsements deals or whatever. I don't know how it would work, but at least the money wouldn't be coming through the university. It would be coming from some other source, and it would kind of bring that stuff that already happens under the table sort of out in the open. You know, you already have, you know, basically it seems like every other day you hear about, oh, USC did this, or Ohio State did this, some sort of recruiting violation, or, you know, prior to the NFL draft, you hear about players getting cars or getting stuff for their parents, you know. And so that stuff happens. They try to sneak it under there. There's a great documentary on ESPN called Pony Excess about SMU's program and how the boosters would sort of pay players under the table.
Oh, yeah. That was a big one, yeah. They're the only ones who have had the death sentence, which was the canceling of a season.
Yeah, they actually, wow. I think they basically effectively lost two seasons of football, and it crippled their program. I mean, they're back now in bowl games, like the last couple of years. They're in a bowl game this year, actually, but they hadn't been since like the 80s when this happened. And they were a huge program back in the day.
What is the concern? Why does the NCAA discourage and, you know, disallow endorsements and agent signings and things of that nature?
Well, they're supposed to have like amateur status at this point. I guess once you've once you've taken an endorsement or hired an agent, you're actually considered a professional at that point.
Mm-hmm. This reaches back to even high school. Like, I played golf in high school, and in the off season, we couldn't play in tournaments where we could possibly win money.
Really? This seems, I don't know, sort of unfair. It seems like if a student can go out and make money, let's say that there's a student athlete, mm-hmm. who has the time to, mm-hmm. to go get a job at Burger King. Mm-hmm. He's out making money by working at Burger King. How is that different than him making money by doing a commercial for Burger King?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What's the distinction?
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it goes down to just the work ethic and what people think. You know, what's easy money versus what's earned money. You know, there's something sort of poetic about being the student who is working hard at your hours throughout the week to try to make money for tuition versus like, well, all he had to do is stand in front of a camera and say, I love the Big Mac or I love the Whopper, and he just gets a fat paycheck. So
it's just so strange. I mean, because I think you both have worked for the universities that you've attended, correct? Mm-hmm. In some sort of like capacity related to your major.
Yeah, we've taught.
Yes. Well, I mean, yeah. In grad school, I taught. When I was an undergrad, I just worked in the cafeteria as a cook. I didn't. I volunteered in labs and stuff, but I never got paid for it.
Sure. But in grad school, I assume you taught classes, and did you do research which benefited the school?
Oh yeah, that's entirely what we do.
For which you were paid, right?
Yeah, you get research. You either get a research assistantship normally or a teaching assistantship.
Yeah, we get a stipend and they tuition remission.
Yeah.
So we didn't pay tuition.
Right. So it seems odd to say that this one area, you know, like when I was in school, I mean, I didn't get scholarships or any sort of tuition thing for acting, but I was certainly encouraged, especially during summer break, to go do professional acting, which I did. Why would it be any different with sports?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I kind of agree. It needs to be done really responsibly. You know, you take like an 18-year-old kid and you give him some of these dividends from football. What does he do with the money?
I love you anyway. Bubba, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your turns of phrase. So even though you're still broke, I love you anyway.
See, I can fill you with real scientific lyrics. But I confess that my mind is twisted. Cause I've been listening to Kanye, Nas, and Jay. Or reading Richard Dawkins on the opposite page. And now this whole rap thing seems awfully strange. Talked about he got game and he's not real. And he's got chains. But wait, that's a peacock's tail. Cause you never hear them say they got it cheap on sale. Which means that bling is meant to represent how much they really spend. And at the end of the day, that's the definition of a fitness display. Like the bower bird's nest, which takes hours of work. It makes the females catch a powerful urge. Just like a style of verse or an amazing flow. But it takes dedication and it takes a toll. Cause the best displays are unfakeable.
All right, listener, it's time for the Smart Showdown. This is a show where we go over the different things that have happened in the past couple weeks, and we get some opinions, and I arbitrarily decide whose opinions are better. We're going to have five different topics, and I think, Jordan, since you won last time in our last competition...
Yes. That'll be a common occurrence, by the way. Get used to it.
Yeah, we'll see.
You've effectively, and since I was in the last one, I'm going to sit this one out and be the arbiter. Dean's going to be the other contestant.
So are we going to make this like a king of the court thing? So I'll just pretty much be doing this every week, and you guys will just switch off being the host.
Well, we'll see if you win this one or not. Okay. Don't sway my opinion early on. This early in the contest. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, you know, talk about an event, and I'm going to ask you your opinion on it. And Jordan, like I said, since you won, you get to sort of, you've metaphorically won the coin toss. You can choose to accept or defer. So if you accept, then you'll get the first question. If you defer, Dean will get the first question first. But we're going to switch back and forth on the questions. So ultimately, it's whether you want to go first three times or you want to go last three times.
I'm gonna take it. I'm going to take the kick.
Okay, here we go. After being discovered about 10 years ago, elements 114 and 116 on the periodic table are finally being added. And the names that they've chosen for those elements are fluorovium and livermorium, respectively. The names will be accepted after the public's been given a chance to comment on the chosen names. My question is, if you were on the naming committee, what would you have named them?
So let's start off with, what is that, fluorovium? Is that the 114?
Correct.
So 114 fluorovium, which, as you all know, was named for Georgi Nikolaevich Fedorov, a Soviet nuclear physicist. And actually, I'm going to go with, I don't know if you've ever seen this guy's Wikipedia page, he kind of looks like Grandpa Munster. So I'm going to go that it should be renamed Munsterium. And then we're going to go with 116, that is Livermorium. Livermorium. And so, as everyone knows, my love of all things religion, 116 holds a special place in Mormon hearts because of the lost 116 pages of the Book of Lehi that Joseph Smith, they're presumed to have been destroyed. And so he actually never retranslated the Book of Lehi. So I'm going to go with Lehimium for 116.
And Dean?
All right, let me take this in another direction. I'm going to name them Unicornium and Pegasium because they're figments of our imagination. If they were meant to exist in nature, then nature would have made them. This is just another example of the liberal scientific community trying to play God. So let's name them after fake things because they're fake elements.
Hey, they exist.
Okay, Dean wins this round.
What?
If only for delivery, but also because I think Jordan may have driven away any of our listeners in the former Soviet Republic for his pronunciations. Okay, on to number two. This will go to you first, Dean.
Okay.
A blogger recently discovered that the Apple iPhone program Siri isn't very helpful if you're searching for an abortion clinic. If you had programmed Siri, what would you have programmed it to not find?
I would program Siri to not find opposing cell phone stores.
God damn it.
Because there's nothing least useful for a cell phone company than to have their own product help you out with the opposition. Maybe even expanding it so that if you're on the AT&T network, you also can't find a Sprint.
So you would program it to be the anti Santa Claus from Miracle on 34th Street.
Sure. Yeah. I don't like get that reference.
Well, he tells the woman to go buy the doll at another department store because it's cheaper there.
Oh, that's correct. Right. Yes. Yes. So, yeah. I think he sends her to Gimbel's.
Yeah.
From Macy's.
All right. Jordan?
Okay, so as everyone heard from my goddammit under my breath there, hopefully, I actually my response was along the same lines, but for a different reason. I actually wanted to specifically not be able to find Verizon dealers because I believe that the Android is Siri's mortal enemy. I think they're both jockeying for position to become whichever program is going to become self-aware and overtake humanity, as you might know. So they're pretty much both fighting for the chance to be Skynet. So that's why I think it should be excluding Verizon specifically.
Okay, I'm gonna withhold judgment on that one. The third one goes to Jordan first, and it's a little dated now, but it's been a month since we did the last podcast. Herman Cain, as you all probably know by now, has decided to put his run for the White House on hold, which basically means, at least for the current election, that he's removed himself from the race for the nomination for the GOP. Is the Republican Party better and the race better or worse off without him?
Okay, well, I think this is like really a depending question about what do you mean better? Like better as in more comical. In terms of the humor of the race, it's better with him in it, so we can hear him talk about ooh, Becky, Stan. But I think in a serious note, I think it is much better for the Republican Party. I think this, you know, this primary race was turning into a circus, and he was one of the lead performers of that circus. And so if they want to be seen as anything, you know, serious in terms of actually appealing to any independent voters with, you know, beyond a fourth grade education, I think this is better for them. Bam.
Dean?
I have to completely disagree with my colleague Jordan here. Herman Cain is the only person in this race who's bringing up how ridiculous other countries' names are. Without Herman Cain, we wouldn't know that we shouldn't care about Uzbeki, Becky, Stan, because
you forgot a Becky. I think there was at least one more Becky in there.
I think my point stands. Stan's one Becky. I think he's the only guy who's bringing to light that we really only need to care about our little part of our little hemisphere, which may or may not.
Little hemisphere. That's
Yeah. Our Western hemisphere.
How many hemispheres are there?
There's a Northern hemisphere, Southern hemisphere, Eastern hemisphere, and Western hemisphere. Okay. We're in the Northern hemisphere and the Western hemisphere. So we really only need to care about our own. And that's not isolationism.
Our only half of the course.
From all people out there. That's not isolationism. That is just plain facts.
All right, I'm ruling with Jordan on this one, and only because I think that in your corner of the hemispheres, Canada would also be included, and we don't need to care about Canada.
Oh, snap.
Okay, this one, where am I at here? Does this go back to Jordan? No, it goes back to Dean to start with.
It goes to me.
Okay, in line with you know the season, a lot of stores have opted to use the phrase "Happy Holidays" during their marketing campaigns in December rather than traditionally saying "Merry Christmas." Proponents of this, you know, claim that it's more politically correct, but opponents say that it's an attempt to marginalize or exclude Christians and Christmas. Which do you prefer? Do you prefer Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas?
I'm going to say that that Happy Holidays is just okay with me. Because if Irving Berlin can write a whole song about Happy Holidays, a song which many of us sing during the holidays,
many
Christian people sing during Christmas, then I think that we can include Happy Holidays as an acceptable term, especially if at every baseball game across the country during the seventh inning stretch we now sing God Bless America, also written by Irving Berlin, then we can definitely take his cue with Happy Holidays.
Very strong words. Jordan?
Okay. You know, I'm going to go. I think the Christmas thing and these the Christians saying that, oh, it's taken away from Christians. I think they've lost that right saying quite a few years ago. You know, we're at a holiday where this holiday kicks off with Black Friday, which is this event where, what was it, last year, what, people trampled to death a Walmart worker. This year, some woman pepper sprayed people so she could get toys for her kids. Like, no, I think we've gone well beyond the original meaning of Christmas years ago. There is no more Christ in Christmas.
So you think Happy Holidays is okay?
Happy Holidays, that's what it is. It's, you know what, and someone should trademark that, and every time someone uses it, someone should get like 5 cents, because it is all commercial.
Give it to Irving Berlin.
Yeah, give it to Irving Berlin's estate. Is he even still, I don't know, when was he?
No,
I have no idea.
He's
okay,
gone.
Well.
I agree with Dean on this one. I think I'm going to side with Dean.
You would.
Mostly because I think, you know, Irving Berlin's song far predated this whole thing, and no one had a problem with it then, so I agree with that. And just on a ruling on the previous one, I rule with Jordan, because I do think that if there's a candidate for who's going to produce Skynet, I think it's Mac. So that leaves both of you at 2 and 2 apiece, right? If I'm doing the calculations correct. And we know I'm not good at calculations. So the last one is going to really come down to who makes the strongest argument. And I think it's the hardest one on the list.
Yeah,
I agree.
The data are in, and the most popular baby names in 2011 were Aiden for boys and Sophia for girls. Evidence suggests that current events like the royal wedding and pop culture, like reality TV shows, can really significantly affect baby names. So what is the most, in your opinion, will be the most popular baby names for boys and girls in 2012?
And I get this one kicked
yes,
first,
right? Yes, goes to you.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, so I think, you know, there's this been trend in recent years of been hitting this economic downturn, but we still have reality shows about rich people, you know, the Real Housewives or the Kardashians, you know, stuff like that. I think there's going to be a kickback response in reality TV where we're now going to have reality TV shows about the downtrodden. And so to go along with that, I think we're going to start seeing some of these creative names. So I think, you know, one of the most popular names is going to be Poverty, where the T is spelled like T-E-E, and Obesity. So, you know, something to reflect the times, and, you know, some of these baby names we're going to see on some of these new reality shows that we're going to be seeing in 2012 and beyond.
So for clarity for the listener at home, which of those would be the girl's name?
I'm going to go with Poverty. Just sounds better. It's kind of like Destiny. But poverty, which might be a destiny for some people.
Okay. Dean?
Thinking about the demographic of those people having children these days, I believe they're right around our age, or give or take 5 years either way. And I remember that a very important movie to me when I was a child was The Lion King. Mm. The Lion King was recently released again, in 3D. I believe that the most popular boy's name and most popular girl's name will both come from this movie. The most popular girl's name, of course, being Nala. And the most popular boy's name will not be Simba, as I'm sure you were guessing. In fact, it will be Rafiki.
Okay. Nala also is the name of my girlfriend's cat, so there you go. Interesting. Wow, those are some crappy suggestions. I'm gonna have to go with Dean on this one though.
Come on.
Yeah, I think that
shenanigans on it.
Only because I think that kids are probably more likely to not get beat up if their names are Rafiki and Nala than if they are Obesity and Poverty.
Yeah, but those kids are gonna be fucking tough and from the streets. You have to fuck with those kids.
Well, then you should have named him Sue, right? So
well, no, that works maybe in like the old west or whatever, but we're talking about the streets here, Ed. The streets.
All right. Well, you know, I'm sorry, but I've rendered my final.
How much more violent are the streets than the jungle. Fields of the pride?
Okay, I'm just saying that I'm playing the rest of this podcast under protest.
Yeah, well, as you well should, as the loser of the contest, Dean. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I guess the stakes are that next time you don't have to host.
Yeah, so when I first started writing these evolution raps about 6 months ago, some of the early drafts, they sounded kind of like this. Yo, yo, the origin of species ain't no feces, dog, believe me. Yeah, and that's all I could think of. So then I thought, damn, this needs to be rewritten. And sometimes people ask me, well, how does your show get written? Like this, performance, feedback, revision. And how do I generally develop my lyricism? Like this, performance, feedback, revision. And how do human beings ever learn to do anything? Like this, performance, feedback, revision. And evolution is really just kind of an algorithm that goes like this, performance, feedback, revision. So the genetic code of every living thing was written like this, performance, feedback, revision. See, the genes are like a text with 1,000 pages, and revisions occur in the random changes that come from mutations. And when they see the light, well, that's the performance, that's the phenotype. And natural selection, well, that's the feedback side. That's about who survives and whose genes catch rides in the next generation.
Yes. Welcome back. For our final segment, we have My Apologies by Dean.
The last time we recorded a podcast, dear listener, we did a lengthy segment on the film J. Edgar. Now, I thought we had some fair criticism, but over the last few weeks, something has really been eating at me, and I want to take this time to make amends to a bright new artist who I'm concerned may be discouraged by our, and especially my, criticism. So, Clint Eastwood, my apologies. Now, I don't know how long you've been in the film racket, but something everyone can agree on is that it's filled with naysayers, nitpickers, and jealous has-beens and never-weres. But I don't want you to get the wrong idea. I thought it was a really good try, and you show a lot of potential, but fine craftsmanship takes time to hone, maybe even a lifetime. I'm sure you'll get there. I know I was especially critical of your lighting scheme, but it takes some real guts to go ahead and create a bold scheme like you did, but don't be too down on yourself about it. I think you might get it the next time. For example, you can look at the movie Million Dollar Baby. Just wonderful lighting there. And as for the accents, which we are also pretty hard on, what can you do? This is really on the actor, but if you need material to suggest your actors watch for ideas, I'd suggest they see Invictus. Not a great movie, but boy, the dialect work is really something. But I am rambling on here a bit. Mostly, I wanted to say sorry if any of us stepped on your dreams at all. And I think you've got a lot of potential, and I'd really love to see the long, long career I'm sure you have ahead of you. Who knows? Maybe you'll even win an award or two someday. Clint Eastwood, my apologies.
That was beautiful,
Dean.
I
just have one comment. I thought for sure when you were talking about the accent and dialects that you would have told him to go back and look at Nicolas Cage and Con Air, because I know that's one that you're fond of.
Or the Blood Diamond. Accents.
Or Blood Diamond.
Not going to let this go.
Well, I'd like to apologize for making this podcast.
Yeah, I apologize for nothing.
So I think that's going to pretty much be the show. We're just going to give you a couple blog updates. Dean, you want to?
Sure. So these are just a few things that are coming up on our blog. We will be posting a guide if people want to submit guests posts. Also, our beard results are in, and Ed swept the categories, which I find extremely hard to believe.
I think shenanigans on that one, too.
I think Jordan's with me on this one. We're both playing that one under protest.
Mm-hmm.
And let me shoot it over to Ed for a little more information on a couple other things.
Oh, first off, thank you to everybody who voted for me. Clearly, I'm the most loved member of the team.
I still think you just went from like library to library and just started logging onto computers to vote.
I agree.
Well, I did, but there was only two libraries in the area, so there's only two votes. So on to some more serious matters. It is the holiday season, and we realize that people out there, they're struggling a little bit. And so what we want to do is we want to give you guys an opportunity to have a little bit extra cash during the holidays. We're going to have a little contest. It's not really a contest so much as it is a blatant ploy to get you guys to like us. We're going to give away a $25 Amazon gift card code. So keep your eyes peeled on the blog for that. And then what else? We also have some upcoming blog entries that you might be interested in. We're doing a segment called Deconstructing December, where we look deeper into the meanings behind a lot of these holiday traditions we hold dear, whether that be things like having a Christmas tree versus certain songs or movies. Dean's already posted an excellent article on there about the hidden meaning behind It's a Wonderful Life. So keep an eye out for that. And the last thing that we want to do is, since it is the holiday season, we do want to give back. And we've decided that we want to donate our proceeds, should we ever have any, from the blog to a charity. And we want your help to decide that. Jordan, did you want to mention a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'll go on a little bit about this. So I think, you know, we want to find, I'm going to donate in the blog's name to something this year, I think, anyway. But I think, yeah, in the future, we're looking for something to kind of affiliate with. So,
well, and also I think we should just open it up to the members of Smarty Nation and let them, you know, nominate any worthy charity.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, it's the people who want to kind of chime in this. I think we'll open that up. If you can convince us, you know, why we should...
And let's make this clear. We're not collecting the money. We'll simply post a way for you as the listener or the reader to give money. So no money will come through us. Great. So I think that's it. I think it's time for us to sign off. So thank you, listeners, ones of listeners, for downloading. And what?
I was going to say, we've got about five. We can almost say fives or even twos of listeners.
All right. Two confirmed.
Well, thank you to our two listeners for downloading. And you can catch us at the blog. And the website is stuffsmartpplike.blogspot.com or on Twitter at smartpplike. Or you can also catch us on Facebook or Google Plus. So until next time.
I'm Ed.
I'm Jordan.
And I'm Dean for Stuff Smart People Like. We think it's smart. So should you.